One more test, test, 1, 2, 3. I received a Swiss Army knife, a hatchet, and a wrist rocket, like a high-powered slingshot, the kind you could kill a small woodland creature with. I want to become the type of man who would live and frame his life in a way that others may live. Welcome to the Form for Good podcast, a framework for men in search of meaning. For much of my life, I lived like the story was about me. And I don't mean like on a grand scale, like I actually thought the whole thing was about me, but my story was the only one I was really ever consciously aware of. And so practically speaking, I lived as though it was all about me. And the thing is if it's all about me, then it's all up to me. It's all up to me to come through, to make things happen, to get my life to work. And that's how I went on for several decades. And this way of approaching life generally goes one of two directions, neither of which are very good. So one thing that can happen, and this was the case for me for at least certain seasons in my life, is that it can seem like it's working. We can figure out a way to work the system. We can focus on the things we're good at and avoid the things that terrify us or that we're not good at. And we can actually get by on our own for a while using our own resources. And this is actually an illusion, because eventually the bottom is going to always fall out. So it can be pretty dangerous to think that you're succeeding at making things work on your own. But that is one way that this plays out. And the easiest way to describe that pitfall would be pride. And by pride, I don't mean arrogance. Arrogance is a part of pride. But I'm thinking more of the idea of just self-reliance, the thought that I have within me what I need to face this world. You can also go the other way. The other thing that can happen is I can recognize that as I'm striving and struggling to try to make things work, it's not working and I'm failing and things blow up. And again, this is generally the end result, no matter which way you go. But it's a question of whether or not I'm aware of it. And when I get into this place of just trying the same things over and over and trying to figure out how to just eke it out and just, you know, grit my teeth and clench my fists and make something work, you start to get to this place of resignation where it doesn't feel like anything you do is worthwhile. Like you don't have anything to contribute. And this is just as dangerous as pride. This is actually the opposite of pride, and it's a place of shame. Now both of these actually stem from the same thing. They stem from this worldview that the story's about me and therefore it's up to me. And so the answer here, the solution, is to actually shift the worldview. It's to get a new framework and change the way that we see things. The reality is the story is not all about me. There's something much larger going on, and I am a part of that, but I am only a part. Something that God spoke to me a while back is that my plot is actually a subplot. Now, a good subplot is important to the overall story. It moves the story forward, but obviously the whole thing is not about that. So it plays an important role, but it's not the focus. And this actually introduces a beautiful paradox. On the one hand, my life is actually far less important than I thought it was, because the story is not all about me. And this is a really good antidote for pride, to recognize that I'm less important than I thought. Having said that, at the exact same time, I'm also more important than I thought. My life matters more than I realized, because the role that I've been given is vital. It is a subplot that moves the plot forward. And if I don't step into that, that part of the story is going to stall out, or even worse, it's going to go in a bad direction. So when I recognize that I do have this vital role to play and that my life is more important than I thought, this is a really good way to combat shame. And this leads us to a third way. It's the narrow road in the middle of these two ditches of pride and shame. And the third way is humility. And humility doesn't require me to forfeit my strength or to lose my strength. It's simply that I'm going to surrender my strength to someone who's stronger than me. Okay, so what humility says is I'm not strong enough on my own. I don't have the resources in and of myself to face this life and to live well. But I do have access to an infinite strength, to the resources of my Father. And because he loves me and because I'm his son, I can access those at any point. So I can approach life with this confidence, not in myself, but in the one who I belong to. There's an old saint by the name of A.W. Tozier, and a brilliant, brilliant writer. And one of my favorite quotes from Tozier speaks to this third way that I'm talking about. Here's what he wrote. "The meek man is not a human mouse afflicted with a sense of his own inferiority. Rather, he may be in his moral life as bold as a lion and as strong as Samson, but he has stopped being fooled about himself. He has accepted God's estimate of his own life. He knows that he is weak and helpless as God has declared him to be, but paradoxically, he also knows at the same time that he is in the sight of God more important than angels. In himself, nothing. In God, everything. That is his motto. He knows well that the world will never see him as God sees him, and he has stopped caring." So as we often do on this podcast, I want to end with a story. And this is actually a story of a good friend of mine. And I got to play a small part in the story, but this is about somebody else. And it's one of the most beautiful pictures of humility that I've ever seen in a group of men. And it's very intentional that I'm sharing his story to try to, while humility is something that I'm striving to grow in probably more than anything else in my life, using some anecdote from my own life would seem a little bit counterproductive when I'm doing a podcast about humility. So I want to highlight my friend Jeremiah. So I was down in Georgia at a men's retreat, and a group of guys, we were at a camp near a state park, and the state park was called Mount Yona. And there was a pretty decent hike there. It was about almost 4.5 miles to get to the summit, and just over 1,500 feet gain in elevation. And a bunch of the guys decided they were going to take one afternoon and go do this hike. And while they were talking about it, one of the men stood up at breakfast or at lunch, and he indicated that we were going to not only make the hike, and there was an open invite to anybody who wanted to come, but we were going to bring Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah was one of the guys at the retreat. He's now become a really good friend. And about 11 years ago, there were some medical complications that had several negative impacts. One of those was a reduction in just strength and motor control in his legs. And so Jeremiah can still walk with canes, but he logs a lot of hours in a wheelchair. And another thing about him that I came to realize pretty quickly, and that he was very quick to admit, is that Jeremiah was not only a strong guy physically, he's 6'5", 200 pounds, but also really strong-willed, the kind of guy that, you know, he had to face this challenge head-on and figure out how to navigate through life. So, you know, driving himself everywhere he needs to go, opening the door for himself, not one to ask for a lot of help. And again, Jeremiah was quick to admit this, and I really think it's true of all of us. I know it's true of me, that difficulty with asking and receiving help, especially from other men. So as I'm listening to the guys talk about the plan for the afternoon, two things are going through my mind. First of all, I'm wondering, did anybody ask Jeremiah? Which I would find out very shortly. And then the second thing was honestly a fair amount of skepticism, or maybe a better word is just reluctance, because I was unclear. I lacked the faith to see how we were going to be able to get Jeremiah up the mountain, because I knew about the hike. And I knew that this was going to require us to carry him. These are not paved trails. These are legitimate off-terrain trails. And so I was unsure about how we were going to accomplish this. And my fear was that we would be disappointed, that Jeremiah would be disappointed. And despite this reluctance, though, I did end up finding myself out in the parking lot with this group of guys as they were starting to formulate a plan. So there was a couple of guys that were really leading the charge, and they had found a way to actually create basically a homemade stretcher. It's called a litter. And they had found a couple of pretty sturdy poles and a hammock, a nylon hammock, and figure out a way that we were going to rig this thing up so that we could carry, four men could carry Jeremiah on our shoulders as he sat in the stretcher. So we got the group together, headed over to the trailhead, and circled up to pray, and then we set off onto the trail. And it took three or four times of trial and error until we finally got this thing set up where we could hold on to it without it slipping out and Jeremiah falling. So we're starting up the trail, and initially it's fairly level and open, but the further we got, the trail begins to narrow, the tree cover gets more heavy, the terrain gets more rough, there's boulders in the trail, and there's times where the passes are so narrow that that one of the front guys actually has to drop off and the other guy has to take both poles on his shoulder. It basically got harder the further we went, and it got to a point somewhere along the hike where just kind of lost track of time and where you were. We were just focusing on one step after the other and rotating as often as we could between the dozen guys working together to carry Jeremiah up this hill. To fast forward the story, we didn't make it to the summit, but we did accomplish something pretty amazing. We ended up carrying Jeremiah over a mile and a half and gaining about 600 feet in elevation, and we got to this place called the First Landing Zone. And this particular area was also a training ground for Army Rangers. So the place we got to was actually a helicopter landing zone. So the hill kind of flattened out and opened up, and it overlooked the valley below down where we could see the camp off in the distance. And Jeremiah took up his canes and walked up to the edge. And we had a pretty amazing 10 minutes of just celebrating what we had all experienced and accomplished together, and ultimately what God had invited us into. And then it started to dawn on me that we were going to have to make it back down. And so we eventually got the team back together and made our way. And in a lot of ways, it was harder on the way down, primarily just because we were so tired. But we ended up making it, obviously, all lived to tell the tale. And it was pretty amazing in the moment, but it wasn't until afterwards, in the days that followed, that I really started to reflect on what had happened and what we had been a part of and what it meant. And I had some conversations with Jeremiah, and the small role really that I was invited to play in this story was to record what happened, to write down what we had experienced so that we could remember it and that we could share it with others. And so what I want to do just to close is share two things from that article. The first is a quote from Jeremiah. It's something that he sent me in a text as he was reflecting on his experience. And then I want to just read the last paragraph of the article to offer some closing thoughts. So this is what Jeremiah sent me in a text. "I wanted to remind you of the true struggle it was to let go and let God use me on that hike, to allow a bunch of guys that I had just met bear the burden of my weight on their shoulders, to get me to the LZ on that mountain, renouncing the agreements that I've been living with for 11 years. I'm just a liability, a disabled veteran, a wheelchair. Real men don't ask for help. But all of that is a lie. I am not dead. God is not done with me. I am powerful and strong. I have an indomitable will to never quit. The Holy Spirit told me you are not weak to ask for help. You are stupid not to. It was freedom like I hadn't felt in years. I realized I needed to stop stiff-arming people and allow them to bless me and to receive blessing from God. I have committed to sonship, and if anything, to telling this story for the rest of my life." And then I ended the article with these words. "Here's the remarkable thing. Jeremiah was not the sole recipient. Whatever help we offered reverberated off him like an echo off the walls of a canyon. His strength infused us with strength. He modeled a humility that undercuts the fiercest pride in all of us. Who among us does not need help? Who among us does not need to be carried? Who among us does not need the love of our Father made manifest in the hand of our brother? So thank you, Jeremiah. Thank you for carrying us up that mountain."